available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC.
We are the Podcast of Champions. Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together, we make the Podcast of Champions. Talking all things Pac-12 football. At least for another year or so. But that's what we're doing. That's what we're doing today. Dave went with the, who was the guy? The painter guy that would, God, they made a movie about him.
Bob something.
Yeah. It's great. We're the Podcast of Champions. And we got to talk
about. I love how your energy just can't stay low. It can't. Hard. You gotta raise some octaves.
I was at the gym at 5:30 in the morning, Dave. Mm-hmm. I had a dentist appointment that was finished a little early, which is nice. You know, sometimes you go in, there's like cleaning, and also the dentist comes in.
And then they're like, x-rays. Oh, we found something we need to fill. Can we just do it now?
It's like takes a long time. Only cleaning today, nothing else. I got out of there quick. I almost bought donuts on the way over. I should have did that, huh? But I kind of feel guilty coming from the dentist to doing that. But yeah, I've had a busy day already. And now we get to talk Pac-12 football, which we love. Still a little spring practice stuff going on. UCLA, the only straggler, springing it into May. So we're going to get an update on that. We got some, I don't know, more rumors about the Pac-12 media rights deal. The Caesar Sportsbook put out the odds to win the league. So we'll talk about that. Stanford is at one end, as you can imagine. But we'll talk about all that kind of stuff. And if you have any questions or comments, we got a bunch of questions that were emailed in. So thank you very much. Some Disney princess ideas for Coach Prime and some other ones. But Pac-12podcast@gmail.com is our email address. Or you can call or text us at 424-532-0678. No voicemails or text today, but you can send us one and we'd be happy to play it. You can tweet us at Pac-12podcast. And the website is Pac-12podcast.com. More importantly, you know, it's great wherever you're listening. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or any of the podcasting platforms, that is awesome. Leave us a 5-star review if the platform allows it. Some kind of rating, especially on Apple. We love that as well. Dave, do we have any new reviews?
No.
So get in there and review it.
No, we have a ton of useless people out there listening to this.
Right. But so those are listeners. We also have live viewers on our YouTube page. So we're
No, we love you. It's the listeners we hate.
Oh, so, but they're listening.
I love you.
Do we really hate them? Yeah, we got a bunch of people watching live on YouTube, so thank you for doing that. Please smash the like button, hit the subscribe, that little bell notification so you know when we're going live or we put up a new video. So we appreciate when you do all of that kind
of
stuff.
We have a really important question that we need to get to right off the bat here.
We do?
Yeah, from Johnny, the most recent question right there.
Oh, hold on. So let me put up. Oh, let me see. Well, the first. Oh, so not Scott.
That can come later. But Johnny's is something we need to settle right now.
Let me put that. Okay, I'll put Johnny's up right now. I haven't looked at it yet.
Okay. If there was a POC Olympics consisting of ping pong, pool, and darts between Dave and Ryan, who wins what?
Okay. My guess is I'm good at pool. And I'm good at darts.
I will crush the life out of you at ping pong.
Okay. So
I'm good at ping pong.
Okay. I'm okay at ping pong.
So the thing with pool is you have an advantage, which is height and length.
Oh, okay.
Which if you need to go behind your back, if you need to do some, you know, tricky things to get the shot you need, you'll have a little bit more ability to do so than me.
Gotcha.
I'm pretty good at pool. But okay. I'm not some.
How about darts?
Darts, I'm okay.
Okay. So
I think you'd probably take darts and pool, and I'd take ping pong.
Okay. You would take
ping pong. If you're certifiably good at both of those.
I didn't grow up with a pool table, but my best friend did in his basement. So, like, you kind of played pool a lot. Like, if you play pool all the time and you have your own stick, like, yeah, I'm not going to beat you. But for the, average pool player, I'm probably better than that.
I played a ton of pool my sophomore year at UCLA because there was a pool table at in the common area in the dorms, and we would just go down there and play basically all night. And it was a lot of fun, and I got pretty good at it then, but I've probably played pool 20 times since then.
Oh, okay.
So, like, I still have the, like, understanding of, like, angles and the whole thing, but I haven't done it in a long time, so it's,
Nothing like you like an Airbnb somewhere and they have a pool table. Like, I love that. You know, like, if you're going somewhere.
All right, if we add foosball to the exchange, where are we?
You would crush me. I'm not good at foosball. Okay. I've only played a few times.
Okay, cool.
Bowling, we could add bowling.
Bowling, so I had at one time my own pair of shoes.
I did too. I have my own ball.
Oh, you have your own ball. Okay, yeah. That's superior. I got to the point, so when I lived in Portland for like a few months, we entered a league. And with the league, you got 3 free games every single day if you went to the bowling alley.
Wow.
So I did that for a little while because I was working at Netflix in their call center, and it was like these insane 11-hour shifts, but I had like most of the day free, and it was only 4 days a week, so I would go to the bowling alley like probably 5 days a week.
Wow. So it's better to have your own shoes.
To the point where I was averaging like 180s.
That's okay.
190s. But again, that was 12 years ago. I haven't bowled like that since then.
So then you would beat me. I broke 200 for like the first time, but I go like once a year or maybe twice a year.
Got it.
But
I think here's the other question. If you gave us each a month to like practice these things pretty extensively, then where would we be? Because I think if you gave me a month of bowling, I would probably get right back to
where
I was. But yeah, man, there's a lot of games to be played here.
I love it.
Maybe we should do that in the off season one of these years. Just do like, okay, this is going to be the bowling year, and we're each going to spend the next month preparing, and then we will have a bowling championship.
I love it. Yeah, I bought like a used ball for like $30. I don't know, like 15 years ago when we had
what poundage?
I think it's 15, I think, or something, But yeah, we were in like a league. Like, there was a lucky strike at Del Amo, and so I help coach volleyball. So we have like volleyball leagues and volleyball classes, and I'm all involved in stuff. They would do like beach kickball. I did that for a little while, and one of the nights used to do like a bowling league, and it was just fun, mostly just drinking and stuff. But me and my buddy both bought like a used ball for like $30, and it was like, oh, cool, this is my ball now.
That's great.
Yeah, I had shoes too, but then like the bottom came off of them or something. Then they look pretty lame. So
yeah, they can be kind of cheesy.
Yeah,
but they can also be a lot better than the like weird faux leather that they use in a lot of these places.
Yeah, I went on a first date a couple months back. I think I told you about the person, and like the idea was let's go bowling first. And she had her own shoes, so I'm like, oh wow, so she's probably legit. And I wiped. That's when I got a 200. I'm like, I swear to God, I've never like I just wiped the floor with her. She got like a 75. And
so what's your beer theory with bowling? Because mine is I improve through a pitcher and then things drastically deteriorate after that.
Yeah, I think that's fair. There's a point of diminishing returns or whatever, right?
Correct.
Like, is that, I think it happens in pool too, where you're sort of like, hey, I got a little buzz going. Like, I made that shot. Look at this.
And no, it's sort of like blackjack, where if you get a little bit in you start to like loosen up a little bit. You're not so conservative. Like, I think that's kind of what it is. Oh, I'm going to take this because I think I can do it.
Yeah.
This pool, this shot.
Nice. And it's like nope.
And nope.
Like, fall
nope.
over.
Nope.
That's a very good question, though. Thanks, Jimmy.
Yeah, very good football-related question. I'm sure that was riveting for everyone out there.
Yeah, I got 10 minutes in, and we're just talking about
it needed to be settled, all right? It needed to be talked about.
I love it. How about cornhole?
I'm good at cornhole.
Oh, good. Oh, this would be good.
Yeah, cornhole, we'd be probably evenly matched.
I love it.
Yeah. Beer pong?
Yeah, I know. I do. I've done that.
I'd murder the game.
Really?
I would. Again, you've got to give me, like, probably a few games to get back in my rhythm, but yeah.
Flip cup?
Okay at flip cup.
Yeah.
I would get kind of bored with it, so I would end up playing, like, derivations of it that included beer pong.
Okay.
Because it's just, I mean, you're just flipping a cup, you know?
Right. It's they do after volleyball class, like we all go to Sharky's and that's like a big, you know, there's this big long table and it just becomes like this massive thing. Because we get like, they sponsor us, we get free pitchers of beer. So there's just pitchers of beer like flip cup matchup and they just do it. And I'm like 52 years old. I usually don't play, but I'll, every once in a while I'll go in and play. But it's always going on. I'm like, oh my God.
And then quarters, Rage Cage, those sorts of games.
I haven't done quarters since like high school, but I was good at it.
Yeah.
Like, wow, it's fun. Trip down memory lane.
Reminiscing.
I got a, do you do the little tiki talk? Have you ever done like the tiki board thing? It's like a ring on a string that hangs from the ceiling and there's a board with like a hook on it.
No, this is too much of that beach shit that you like.
It's a beach thing, yeah.
Yeah.
So I bought one. I got one from a house that was like, do it. Like, I did it like an Instagram story there. Like I did it. So I just filmed myself and it just goes all the way up and clicks. And everyone's like, how many tries did it take you? And it was four, but like, it can be hard. Like it's hard to get sometimes, but.
A strong recommendation if you like drinking games and you have a group of like friends, say a bachelor party or something, Rage Cage. I didn't know about it in college. I only learned about it afterwards. A lot of fun.
Okay. Oh, someone put, Alex said Rage Cage.
Oh, there. Yeah. Yeah. Alex is a connoisseur. He understands.
Gaucho Ball. I'm not sure what that is. I'd have to check that out.
Yeah, you should Google Rage Cage. I'm not going to explain the rules here. It'll get really, really boring.
Oh, I mean, is it already boring or no?
No, but it's basically a skill game with ping pong balls where you're trying to bounce them into cups, but the cups stack as you go, as you go around, and so it becomes progressively harder and harder. And if the person behind you gets theirs in the single cup while you have the big thing of cups, then you have to drink.
Oh, everything.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it gets a little insane.
Nice. All right. Well, why don't we just kind of jump into football?
Why don't we just kind of jump right into the actual subject matter of this podcast?
Without further ado, it's not a saying I like, but I use it.
It's what recruits always use in their announcements, you know. Oh, no. It's That being said.
Yeah.
With that being said. I'd like to announce that I am going to USC.
Oh, Howell says go-kart racing.
Never done.
I've gone like a couple times. I'm not very good. I would need to like get a lesson or something, just like when you're supposed to turn and stuff. Like, you know,
yeah,
I feel like I'm never going.
Never done.
Yeah. All right. Well, we got to talk about
UCLA Bruins.
Because they finished up spring practice.
Yeah.
The final Pac-12 team.
Yeah, they finished on Friday.
Ball. Yeah, Friday morning.
Cinco de Mayo
practice, but I read your report. Like 50 fans showed up.
Yep.
I saw, you know, Chip Kelly speaking afterwards to media. I think the first question I saw, I don't know who asked it, but it was like kind of a long question, which is sort of a pet peeve of mine. Like just ask a question and move on. It was a really long explanation of like the quarterback.
Uh-huh.
Battle or whatever,
yeah.
and then Chip Kelly was pretty funny afterwards. He's like, "Well, it sounds like you thought about it more than me." So it's like it was pretty good.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they, no Pac-12 network there. Chip Kelly kind of talked about that a little bit, but the floor is yours, Dave. What was the wrapping up spring football?
So it was a really interesting spring. Talked about it before, but you know, there's a quarterback competition, there's a running back competition, there's new receivers, there's complete confusion on the offensive line about who's going to even be there. So it was a lot of fun on the offensive end. On the defensive end, personnel's more or less the same. Mostly guys returning. So not as much interesting there, but offensively, obviously, there's a bunch of questions. The headliner was the quarterback competition. Chip Kelly, you know, playing his... I haven't thought about that. But he was actually pretty forthcoming about it. He said, we don't really need to settle on a guy until deep into August. It's really just game week prep, and then you probably want a little bit more time before that just to get the guy comfortable with the idea. But as of right now, Ethan Garber's he definitely performed the best in spring. Now obviously when you have a 17-year-old freshman coming in spring, the improvement from there can be leaps and bounds, and suddenly he could come out in August and look like the clear and definitive starter in Dante Moore. But right now I'd say it's Garber's job. Moore looked good. He had real flashes where it was just like, wow, this guy's, you know, a brilliant player. He's got a great natural feel.
really just understands ball placement, touch, like in a way that Dorian Thompson-Robinson literally never did. Like Moore's throwing balls where it's like, oh, that was the exact right way to throw that ball. Exactly perfect placement, exactly perfect accuracy, exactly perfect touch, the whole thing. But then some things became kind of clear about him in like the third or fourth week where intermediate throws he kind of struggled on. He kind of started to struggle on as spring wore on, where it became a little bit more clear that he does have some deficiencies in terms of arm strength, at least with his present motion, because he tries to kind of – he's just throwing with the exact level of, you know, force that he needs to. But on these intermediate balls, he'd be trying to toss it to a guy at the sideline, and it would take so long to get there that the safety would be crashing down on it. And it's not like he's throwing with maximum effort. And I think it's more of an adjustment he needs to make where you got to put more juice on that ball. But it's an adjustment he still needs to make, where he's just not quite there yet. Short stuff, he's really quick with the way he throws. It gets out very quick, so he's not a problem there. And on deep stuff, like I said, his touch is excellent. But intermediate throws were a little bit of a bugaboo in the middle stretches of spring. So that'll be an area of focus, I'm sure, for him heading into fall. But Garbers, I think right now, is the top guy. I think the big headline for UCLA is the receiving core is probably, I love that, that's like Vanna White. The receiving core is probably the most talented receiving core at UCLA, I mean, as long as I can remember. I mean, you probably have to go back to Freddie Mitchell, J.J. Stokes era in the 90s, like those kinds of guys.
Kyle Ford now.
Well, it's not even just him. So Kyle Ford was really good this spring.
He was, okay.
He had a really, really nice spring. It's so good to see him fully healthy.
Yes.
Going into a year, and he's clearly got a ton of confidence, took on a leadership role already with this group, like really vocal on the practice field, pumping guys up, big butt slapper, you know, big handshake butt slapper, but like also like just doing like, you know, kind of rare things that you don't have, like bringing water over to like the freshman who just ran a route and then like taking him under his wing and like telling him, oh yeah, you did a great job or whatever. Like, and like,
he's a great kid. So that's good to see. Yeah. Yeah, you want to see him succeed.
Yeah. No, it was, he, I think is a real asset. And the vocal part of him, like leadership for the wide receiver group, caused a little bit of consternation with the DBs at times.
Really?
Cause he would talk a little bit of shit after some plays. What I would say about Ford is he's really, really good. He made some very spectacular catches, great contested catches. He's so big and so strong that he doesn't get knocked off his line. Like if you're a DB, you got to hit him, and it's probably going to be PI if you want him to not come down with a with a jump ball. And he can make spectacular catches. The thing with him was actually a lot of drops on like 5-yard passes, like where it would just be like concentration. You got to maintain concentration when you're in that situation, because those are the ones where you can't have drops. That's designed as like a pure running play almost. So you have to catch that ball. So that's an area. But the big guy was J. Michael Sturdivant, the Cal transfer.
Yeah. Because Cal's offense was amazing, right?
Well, this is the thing, is Cal's offense was a fiery trash heap, and he had 65 catches and almost 800 yards.
That's pretty impressive. Yeah. Fiery trash heap offense.
And watching him this spring, I mean, the thing is, like, he was a 4-star. He's not, like, an unheralded guy, and he was obviously observed, but I still feel like he's a little bit underrated. And maybe part of it was being in that Cal offense. But his combination of size and speed, playmaking ability downfield, like this is gonna sound ridiculous, and I fully meme the shit out of it. I don't care, but like I was just watching him, like kind of poor man's Randy Moss, just over and over and over again. Where like even just the way he would catch the ball, you remember like Randy Moss when he'd run downfield, and the only time where he looked like he was about to catch the ball was right at the very end, where he would just kind of stick his hands out like this.
Yeah,
like he was just.
It wasn't like you're to preparation.
And he wasn't given any indication to the DB that the ball was coming in.
Right.
Yeah. He does stuff like that. And so it was just, you know, and then like just he can obviously beat guys deep. He's beaten basically every corner deep, which probably isn't great about UCLA's cornerbacks. But on top of that, on crossing pattern, he catches a ball. And he's got the guy on his hip or whatever, but he beats him to the edge. And then that guy maybe tried to cut him off, but he turns so fast up the sideline that he beats him down the sideline too. And it's just UCLA hasn't had a guy like that with that combination of size and speed in a long, long, long time. I mean, the only guy who I can even think of dominating a practice like Sturdivant did at times this spring was, you remember Jordan Lasley? So he had a couple, the thing with Jordan Lasley is he was a complete head case, but he had a couple of times where his head was screwed on straight. And his last year, he was incredible, but when he had his head screwed on straight, he was like kind of like that. And Sturdivant is like that, but obviously not a head case. So anyway, those two guys, Cam Brown's back, Braden Pegan, a redshirt freshman, Titus Mokiau Ademolola is a junior. It's a really talented receiving core. So that'll make the quarterback's lives a little bit easier. So the offense, I think the offensive line is going to get figured out. They've got a transfer coming in from Colorado and some guys getting healthy. So I think it'll be
fine.
Who
doesn't have a transfer coming in from Colorado?
Basically. Yeah. I think it'll be a top 10, top 15 offense again. The big question coming out of spring is the defense, and you just can't know. You just don't know. Yeah. They didn't bring in a ton of talent, so a lot of it is going to be how does the scheme tailor better to these guys than it did before. It's a new coordinator, Danton Lynn. He's saying the right things, but you literally just never know until you watch some games. So defensively, it'll be a big question mark again, but I don't see much reason why this can't be a team that's about as good as last year, and the schedule is about as bad as last year. So 9-3, 8-4, you know, one of those again.
Extensions.
I mean, the thing is, nothing that's going to get Chip Kelly fired, that's for sure.
Yeah, heading into Big Ten schedule year one, so... all right, curious. And, you know, the odds makers, we can kind of talk about that. Caesars Sportsbook came out with a list of all the Pac-12 teams and associated odds with them for winning the conference. And we'll see kind of where UCLA lands in all that. So I thought we'd go over that because it's kind of interesting. I know you had it up on the front page of Bro. But Stanford, I don't know if you looked at this, David, but you're probably looking at it now. Stanford... minus
great value
30,000 to great, win the great, conference.
Great value.
It's, you know, if you put a couple bucks down, you can make some serious cash, you know.
All right, so why don't we do this instead of reading them all off? Well, okay. So anyway, Stanford minus 30, ASU minus 15,000, Cal minus 7,500, Colorado minus 6,000, Arizona minus 5,000, Washington State minus 2,500, UCLA minus 1,600, Oregon State minus 900, Utah minus 600, UW minus 350, Oregon minus 280, and USC minus 180. What's the best value you see here?
Yeah, just so you know, so Stanford is basically 300-1.
Yeah, so Stanford, they're expecting Stanford to be by far the worst team in the league this year, which I agree with.
So I think Stanford's too far gone for even 300-1. I don't think there's a lot of value there. I mean, I don't like, you know, I would have ASU as a better, I mean, ASU. Like,
I'd have you ASU above Cal.
Yeah, I would have ASU above Cal. They're 150-1. But I still don't think, like, I'm not seeing like the sort of value there. We'll talk about Colorado in a minute. Some of the odds there, I wouldn't touch that. With, you know, Arizona, but you know we're getting in there. But
I think UCLA is the best value here.
I think like 16-1, they could win it, right? So like that's pretty good. Like Oregon State's only 9-1. Like that's not. I think Washington State being 25-1. I don't
love any of the top five from a value perspective.
Yeah, I could go with UCLA just because they're sort of like you could see them in the top five.
And the schedule is really easy. They avoid Oregon and Washington in conference.
And you still get 16-1. So if a few things break right, you know, then I think you could get value there. So I think I would agree with you. I mean, unless you think Arizona's going to make some, but, you know, that's 50-1. I just don't think any of those would really work. If anything, I'd rather take a flyer on like ASU at 150-1.
The worst value here is Stanford. Like, you're just burning money.
at 300-1, you need
I would need that to be like 1,000-1, I think, for me to take a flyer on Stanford.
Yeah. But like as far as the long odds, I'd probably go ASU. I don't know, just because like crazy things can kind of happen.
Yeah, no, so with the new coaches, you've got there's definitely some variability potential. I don't think ASU or Colorado can do it in year one, but Colorado's pretty bad value, too. 60 to 1 feels horrible.
Which is weird. So John Ewing tweeted this out, and I wanted to share it with you. So 8.1% of the bets for to win the college football playoff, this is from BetMGM, are on Colorado. 8.1%, sixth most of any team. They are like 250 to 1, essentially, to win the playoff, which seems like not enough value, right? Like, I don't know why all this money is coming in on Coach Prime to like win, but holy cow, like that just seems kind of crazy.
Yeah, it's I don't think it's way too overblown, and it's being baked into the odds now, because that's. Colorado will be better this year, but if they do get to bowl eligibility at this point, given everything they lost after spring, I know I was kind of banging that drum beforehand, but given what they lost after spring, I'd be shocked.
I don't get it, but it's sort of one of those things where it's just like, all right, here where we are, and this is what's, you know, because, yeah, that's tough. I mean, if you were going to say, like, win the Pac-12, like, 60 to 1, I don't even think that's a great value, right? Like, it's just, you know, they've lost so much, but people, the magic of Coach Prime, I don't get it, but yeah. That's apparently kind of what is out there. But yeah, so interesting. We'll see. About favorites, who would you have as the favorite? Like,
I mean, I think it's pretty fair as it is right now. I think Oregon might be getting a little overvalued just because, again, we don't know totally how that offense is going to look with the new guy.
I kind of might have Washington over Oregon.
Yeah, I kind of might too. And, you know, Utah, honestly, Utah minus 600.
That's given
the history there, it's like, is that undervalued? But
that's a fair point. Like, two-time champs, like, you're going to get 6 to 1 to win the conference. Like, I probably would. They would be up there as far as, like, where I'd put some bucks.
Yeah, I mean, USC, I think, is the clear favorite, and it could maybe even be a little bit clearer than it is right here. Like, I think you could put Oregon and UW and Utah all in the kind of same areas, like, I don't know, minus 300, 400, and then have USC as, like, minus 150, because I think they are the clear favorite this year. It would take... I mean, you don't want to say it, but, like, they've got a returning Heisman winner. They've reloaded at so many positions. The defense has a lot more talent. It would take a real, this is genuine, serious, it would take, like, Alex Grinch actually being as bad as a lot of people say he is for them not to be significantly better than they were last year when they, you know,
were, I mean, they're basically a you know, Caleb Williams' hamstring from winning the conference, right?
Correct. So if, you know, if his hammies remain healthy, yeah, I think they're the overwhelming favorite.
Yeah, as long as he stays healthy, they'll probably be fine, you know? Like, but outside of that, then I think anything can kind of happen. But they need to get, even how bad they were on defense, they still almost won it, you know? It's like, so if they're better on defense, then maybe you don't need as much from Caleb Williams, but I don't know, we'll see.
Yeah, you've written these all as minuses. These are pluses.
Yeah, I don't know. That's what just was in
whatever.
It was in the thing. I think it was in the article like that way.
Haters gonna hate.
Yeah.
But yes, yeah. It's Free Taiwan.
Thanks, Free Taiwan. Yeah. I don't know. That's where the article had it. Maybe just the article I copied from, they had it wrong or something. But yeah, it should be plus 30,000. 300 to 1. We said it correctly as far
whatever.
As
whatever.
Like 300 to 1 stuff goes. Had you so more kind of rumors. I know you love when
I love rumors. Oh, is this that crap you retweeted from, like, I have a YouTube show the other night?
Monty show. They're like it's like a legit show.
Okay, again, you say this thing, but the Monty show,
yeah,
did you even retweet it? Where is it now? Oh, okay, there it is.
I retweeted it. Yeah.
He has so first he's a guy who bought a blue check. He's paying $8 a month.
You really hate that.
To Twitter.
People buy the blue checks.
Two, he's following almost 2,000 people and is followed by 6475. He has 200 more followers than I do, and I follow 143 people.
Okay.
Uh-huh. He has no information. None. Zero.
He has a source.
He's making things up.
So should we not talk about
it? No, please. Let's talk about it.
His sourcing said that ESPN was still in a deal, so that's good for the Pac-12, but they had a cap of like $90 million for what they want to do.
Okay. The Monty Show says this.
This is from the Monty Show.
Good, good, good.
I'll do some more research on the Monty Show, but I think I've been on the show. I think I've that's why I follow them, because I've been on the show before.
Yeah.
Back in the day. I did. Was it DK and PK? Like, I did Utah, Salt Lake City Radio this morning.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I don't know. But anyway, he's saying that the presidents do not want their tier one games, so the most popular games, to be on streaming only. And that, so the big thing was, that has eliminated Amazon, and Amazon wanted like a Friday primetime window with one of the better games, and the presidents were not willing to do that. Which
do you remember when actually Dennis, makes sense. You remember when Dennis Dodd reported literally a week ago that
ESPN was out.
ESPN was out, and then and he's a legitimate reporter from CBS, but one who we've noted is literally just regurgitating whatever he's hearing from a Big 12 source.
Yes.
And then literally that same day, it was refuted by a million other outlets.
Yeah, there was like two, but yes.
I guess my point is nobody knows shit. Nobody knows a goddamn thing. They're all regurgitating shit they've heard from random people. And until something gets announced, we don't know.
You know what happens when there's nothing gets announced for a long time? Like, there's a void, right?
Yeah.
There's a void of information, and it's going to get
but
filled.
You've had these idiots on Twitter, and I'm not saying YouTube : The Monty Show Blue Check is an idiot. He has tweeted 117,000 times.
There's a lot of tweets.
But I'm not saying that's an idiot. But there are those idiots who have just been posting on Twitter relentlessly since like July of last year with their fake information. It's like, do you remember right after Trump was elected and there were all those like resistance libs on Twitter who were making up like just fake bullshit conspiracy nonsense on Twitter all the time?
Yes.
Like, oh man, they're gonna, and like the following the like Robert Mueller investigation and all that kind of stuff. And it was like this, it was like this cinematic universe going on that was like this self-contained thing where if you were outside of it, you're like, that all sounds insane. But it was like something that everyone enjoyed
what's
following along inside. Yeah. That's what this feels like. That MH Ver 3 or whatever, that guy who's posting on Twitter all the time about this stuff, the one from the Big Ten who's always doing this stuff.
The Minnesota fan.
Yeah, the Minnesota fan.
He started his own YouTube show,
what is
too.
It, like Genesis 58 or something? I don't know. There's all this, all these different things, and they're all full of shit. They all are. But we all just keep sharing their tweets for some reason. Ryan keeps retweeting them from our account. And I'm saying that as somebody,
like,
and I'm saying that as somebody who has a friend of a friend who said Colorado and Utah were going to the Big 12, but I presented that in exactly the way it deserved, which is I have a friend of a friend I don't know who said this.
Have you
These people
up?
Are not saying anything because they're getting it from their random bullshit brain. They're not getting it from anyone else.
Did you follow up with your friend, by the way?
Yeah, he said it's still happening, but who knows?
Okay.
But
no, it's good.
But so, that's friend of a friend.
Hold on. That's where do we got? Yeah. Friend of a friend says Colorado's still leaving.
Who knows, man?
I love it.
Nobody knows. None of these people know.
I do like the Sports Business Journal guys. They have a cool podcast and stuff. They seem to be somewhat dialed into things, I would say, sourcing-wise with in the business world. They were reporting, so it's similar. They're saying ESPN isn't chasing the Pac-12. But they would do a deal if it works out for them. They're just trying to be opportunistic. So I'm sure.
Do you know what that is?
That is logic.
But that's obvious reporting that has all of the right language for something that feels true, right?
Yes.
Because a lot of coulds or a lot of, yeah, if this thing happens, yeah, maybe. No definitive shit. You want to know why? Because there's nothing definitive right now.
True.
Like, just. Do you think the Monty Show would have it first if Amazon was like, nah, we're out of this shit?
Mm.
You think so?
The Monty Show is pretty, I don't know. I'm just, you know.
Anyway.
It's in the Pac-12 footprint.
Yeah.
I've been on the show. I'm like, they must know what they're talking about. Plus, we can talk about something. We need content, right?
I love content. I love content production.
You love content.
It's my favorite thing about our industry.
Did you read Wilner's latest content?
Maybe.
It's about the Comcast mess. he thinks that the president should pay for it. But basically, like, every school is going to have to, like, they're going to, like, $5 million less. Basically, Comcast is going to, for what they think, when they have to pay the Pac-12 for the rights for Pac-12 Network and all that, they're going to withhold the $50 million, whatever it is. And was it 50, 60? I forget what it was. So they won't, you know, it's basically like, well, we already overpaid you, so the next time we have to pay you, we're not going to pay you that or whatever. And so that would come out of basically money that would go to each athletic department. Wilner's idea was this was the president's fault. They're the ones that put Larry Scott in there, put him in that position. This should come out of some general university fund or slush fund than, you know, having the athletic department. So the athletic directors have nothing to do with this. This was all at the presidential level. So that was sort of his thoughts. But it seems like this is going to start coming to a head here, and we're going to see some potential hits for athletic departments and their budgets.
Yeah.
Which is fun.
That's a lot of fun. We love it. Don't we, folks?
You've heard of this guy, Noel Mazzone?
Nollerton Mazzonal.
Hmm. Did you see? There was a funny tweet that I saw.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. That was just your voice coming back at me because I turned the volume on my computer.
Yeah, because you do that kind of stuff.
Yeah. He's going to.
Did you see this?
He's going to be the offensive coordinator for two different high school teams who could potentially meet at some point this season if they both make the playoffs and meet at that point, I think.
I don't understand this at all. Chaparral and Higley.
They play on Friday nights, too, I think, both of them.
Apparently, one practices early, one practices later, so we can do that. But, yeah, you're right. Like, games wouldn't be the same. Like, he was a offensive coordinator in major college football.
So the only thing I can figure is this may be like an AI sort of situation where he's not actually going to be doing any of it, but he has sold his offense to both of these schools and is like going to help train the person who's going to call the plays while never leaving his couch. Wow. That's the only thing I can figure, because knowing Noel and then also knowing he's sold his offense, like he sells it online, the end zone, if you want to go look it up. Maybe it's something like that. And then he'll do like the practice training, but somebody else is calling plays on Fridays.
Interesting. Okay.
I don't know. Really, really insane though. Very crazy story.
That is nuts, but a little Pac-12 flair there. There's a couple of scandals too. So I guess Jin DeLora, there was a sexual assault allegation when he was in high school at St. Louis High School. So obviously now he's the quarterback for Arizona. They settled, and he had a teammate that was there with him at St. Louis who went to Utah.
He's not a safety. Isn't he at Wisconsin?
Wisconsin now, yeah. And I guess they settled this lawsuit, and there was some undisclosed amount of money paid to the alleged victim and all of that. But it seems like this is now behind. I don't think Arizona's doing anything. If you remember, DeLora also had some DUI charges that ended up getting dropped when he was at Washington State. But they were just sort of reading some of the Arizona reporter tweets about this. It doesn't seem like it's going to impact the season at all, but that was just something that was out there. I don't know if you saw that, Dave.
Yeah, I did see it. Obviously, extremely gross. If he was not the starting quarterback for Arizona, he would be off the team. These are facts. Obvious facts.
Apparently,
if he was not the starting quarterback for Arizona, he would be off the team already.
It's probably true. He had to write a letter of apology for the alleged sexual assault that happened.
Here's the thing.
The details were not good.
I won't say it's one thing to be accused of sexual assault and another thing to be very credibly accused and having to go through this entire process. Because in a lot of cases, there isn't a difference except the profile of the victim. Because a lot of accusations of sexual assault do not get to the point that this one is. But the fact that it has gotten to this point means there is some credibility behind the accusation. Let's be real about it. And if there is, he shouldn't be playing college football. Like, I'm not saying he needs to go to prison. I'm not super carceral. Like, I don't think that's the answer to everything. But he shouldn't be a high-profile athlete for a school right now.
Yeah.
It's gross.
Eddie also pointed out he punched a teammate during a game. That was...
Yeah, I mean, he punched... look, and I'm not... it's not one thing related to the other, but There are a lot of things about Jaden Delora right now where if he was not the starting quarterback for a football team, he would not any longer, not only not be on the team, he wouldn't be a student at the university.
Yeah.
So I think it behooves us all to be honest about that fact. Whether you want to say, well, we don't know for sure, all that kind of stuff, fine, if that helps you feel better. But if this was walk-on receiver X or, you know, final guy in the depth chart Y, he wouldn't be on the team anymore.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
There's also been a couple, like, gambling issues. So it started where was the first one? It was – Iowa – no, was it – was it Iowa baseball? It was a baseball one. Oh, LSU – Alabama baseball, sorry. Alabama baseball, they were playing LSU, which is, like, one of the best teams in the country. The weirdest – it's just such a weird scandal. Some guy in Ohio is at – the Cincinnati Reds, like the stadium where you can bet. Betting's legal there. He's in line to like make his bet. He's on the phone with the head baseball coach at the University of Alabama, whose ace pitcher on Friday night isn't going to be able to go. Bets it two different ways. We don't know how much or whatever. That you know, bets LSU, who was already would have been favored anyway, even if the ace was going, but almost loses. It was like ended up being like 8-6. But you know, wins the bet or whatever. And the odds weren't even great. Like the money line was pretty terrible, but somehow within minutes, like they know that something's up because no one, I think it was FanDuel, like nobody at all, some of this reporting came from The Athletic, I guess nobody bet on this game at all. So there's all these checks and flags and things that electronic, like, so they can find out like, oh, did you just open an account and you made this weird bet? Or just nobody betting on this game, and you are, they kind of know right away. And they somehow figured out from security cameras that he was talking to the head coach of the Alabama baseball team. I don't know how. They fire the baseball coach, and it was just sort of like this crazy thing. And to me, this is like, hey, the system works. Like, it's not easy to cheat this stuff. If you're going to, like, cheat, this was some obscure bet, and they figured it out, you know, right away. But now, like, Iowa – a bunch of sports in Iowa and athletes from different sports were caught up in a scandal. Iowa State was as well. There have been a few more, but I don't know what your thoughts are. Like, I'm not anti-sports gambling. I think it's okay. But I think that they have, you know, there's real – they figure something out is wrong. They take the game off the board. Everybody knows. And it's just like – I think this is a system in place that – it's going to be really hard for this to work. If you're going to be some college kid trying to cheat this, you're going to be some head coach of a team that makes $500,000 a year trying to cheat this to win a $1,000 bet or something. It just seems pretty dumb. But I feel like the betting world is good at figuring out when stuff isn't right. But I'm kind of curious if like the NCAA has to come through and make some more new rules or something with this, because now like it's becoming such a big part, and it's hard to
do rules and regulation about something that is becoming increasingly legal around the country. So I'm pretty with personal like freedoms and stuff. I'm usually pretty marijuana should be legal and all these different things should be legal and yada yada yada. Sports betting and gambling in general, and I'm a big fan of both. I like doing both. should both be heavily, heavily regulated and restricted. It's a societal ill. It's heavily tied to addiction. People can much more than like. I mean, not much more than like. I mean, it's being addicted to alcohol can be very similar, but in terms of what it can do to your life. But this can take people who are otherwise, you know, people doing their thing and, you know, lose all of their money. And because people don't have a sense of scale, because they don't have an understanding of, okay, how quickly can I lose this money?
And it's like on your phone now. Live betting, not even like you're putting like $100 bills in it.
Is there was a proper amount of barrier to sports betting, to gambling in general. You had to go to a place. You had to either go to an Indian casino, or you had to go to Vegas, or you had to go to Atlantic City, or you had to go to New Orleans, or one of these places where there is some sort of municipal or state government allowance for that. But now it's becoming something you can do from your couch while you're watching a game, and it ties into, especially with sports gambling, it ties into this like real emotional pig-brained element of people. Like we've talked about it before, but like fandom is a very weird thing. Like it is something that makes otherwise intelligent people behave very, I mean, it's kind of a charged word, but tribal, like very like this is my thing and then you're against it. And it's why people get killed at sporting events because people, their brains stop working correctly. Tying that to something where they could lose all of their money is, well, it's something that we're doing for profit and people are convinced it's a good thing because they don't have a problem or they don't think they have a problem. And so they're like, oh, well, I want to be able to easily put in my $100 that I do every week on the game that I want to get on. And if you have disposable income to do that and you don't have an addiction problem, great. That's good for you. But that's not everybody. And it's not even a lot of people. A lot of people bet more than they should. And it's yes, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there saying, well, we can't protect everyone from every action that they do. Sure. But there's a reason why we regulate certain things. There's a reason why we regulate seatbelts. There's a reason why we regulate alcohol consumption. There's a reason why we regulate certain drugs because some people aren't great at controlling their behaviors, again, addiction. And our job as a society is to, you know, as much as we're able, try to help those people. And it's not making gambling illegal. It's not making sports betting illegal. But it should it be that easy? Should it be so friggin' easy that you can lie signing up for it or whatever, and you can be a 16-year-old betting on stuff, or at 18 when you're a certifiable dumbass? Like, think about how many 18-year-olds you know. Think about you at 18. You were dumb as shit.
Yes.
Should you be able to bet on anything? No. God, no. At 21, I shouldn't have been able to bet on anything. Like, I had no disposable income. I went to Vegas and lost, like, $800. That's $800 that was, like, it's like I had to sell an organ to come back from that. And so, no, you shouldn't be able to do any of that stuff. Making that really easy, all that benefits, all it really benefits is people with really disposable income who can do whatever they want and the companies and the casinos. And fuck companies, fuck casinos, right? Are you with me? So next time there's a thing to make gambling illegal, just vote against it.
The if you ever go to like the racetrack, gambling it's kind of
legal.
Funny.
I think I said gambling legal.
You said illegal, I think.
Anything to make it legal, just vote against it.
Okay. It's becoming legal in many states. It's, Alabama's not one of them. California's not one of them. But if you go to like a racetrack, like I like going, I don't know, maybe once every couple years I'll go to one.
You like seeing horses die?
No, I mean, I'm not a big into horse guy, but like you go to Santa Anita and then you like look at the program and like, ooh, that's like a 10 to 1. I'll bet that one to place or something. I just like doing that, you know. $10 or something, you know, like I'm not betting a lot of money. It's just like you said, disposable income. It's kind of cool to just have it there. You could do it if you want, but you definitely look around and you see people that are trying to like make rent, you know, like they're trying, like, I need to win this race.
I need to go to the track because
so I don't get evicted.
Like, well, it's the people who are bad. Like, oh, you know, if I keep playing long enough, if I keep playing the pass line long enough, I'll eventually double it up. You know, I'm going to start low and then I'll eventually make back my nut here. And then I'll be okay. But you see people doing that, like going down a well of despair whenever you're at Vegas at the racetrack for sure. And it's just like, look, I mean, it's ugly, man. That's a, you know, there's, yes, personal freedoms. That's our friggin' doctrine in this country. But goddamn, we don't need that. Like, we don't need people being that able to ruin their lives at the drop of a hat. Like, the precarity of life is already so shitty. Like, you can walk down the street and get hit by a fucking bus, and it's so easy in the United States because there are no goddamn bike lanes. But that's a side note. But shouldn't there be like a little bit of protection for these people? Like, shouldn't you feel like, you know what? It would be kind of bad for X percentage of people to just lose their livelihoods because it was really easy to do it from their phone. Like, I mean, we can do that, right? Like, we can figure that out and you know, make the right decision here. Yeah, your convenience on betting on the Colts or whatever might be a little bit less, but you will also be protecting, you know, countless, you know, millions probably from, you know, losing their shirt.
Yeah. Bring it back to college sports. Well, if you go to, like, if you're a student athlete that's one messaging. Messaging has been clear from the NCAA about betting and all of that. So it's one of those things where they've always tried to keep the integrity of the sport as an important part of this. You know, there's been point shaving scandals and things in the past and all that. Andy Staples has a funny, he's like, if you want to point shave in football, like it's a little harder. Like basketball, you had the Donaghy guy, like that was doing overs and unders, and he was the referee kind of like calling more fouls to like influence the game. His theory was interesting on football. He's like, you get to the long snapper and you could do it like a couple snaps over somebody's head, like on a punt, like that's a safety. You could really like change the game just by having the long snapper screw up a little bit. I'm like, oh, that's kind of interesting. But it's pretty clear in these locker rooms about what you can and can't do. What they might say is like, hey, if you're a student athlete, you can't bet on the NBA. Because I think that's what was going on with the Iowa stuff. There was betting on other sports and things. So I'm curious to see what they do. They're probably going to pass something because now there's, you know, sponsors of athletic departments, you know, that have official sports books associated with them, things like that. Like it's becoming a lot more prominent. Mm-hmm. All the TV money you're getting, the TV broadcasts are talking about the odds. They're talking about the betting lines, everything. But I think they're going to have to come up with some rules that basically like, hey, if you're a student athlete, you can't bet on college sports or something. Like maybe you can bet on the NBA or what, but you can't do that. So there's going to be something, and there's already, I think, a bunch of rules in place, but it'll be curious to see like what they do, especially as more scandals pop up.
And they will.
Yeah, they definitely will.
Yeah. But I mean, again, go back to judgment. You know, before the age of 25, everyone's a fucking idiot, and everyone in college athletics is under the age of 25.
Right. But it's sort of like sometimes you have a good system in place. Like the people that run the sports books, there's a lot of. And I don't think they could have done this 10, 15 years ago. Now, you know, like Bringing Down the House? There was a really good book, and I think they made a movie out of it where, like, the MIT kids would come, count cards, go to Vegas, and they'd have this elaborate sort of scheme where you had one
Bringing
big
Down
better.
The House was a movie starring Steve Martin and Queen Latifah from 2003.
Then maybe that's not the right one.
It's a romantic comedy.
That was the wrong one. Something with the house. It was the MIT kids that were like
that was the name
cards.
Of the book. The movie was 21 or The Last Casino.
Okay, but the book was called that. Bring Down the House. I think
the inside story of six MIT students who took Vegas for millions.
Right.
And also, 2003 released in 2003 is the book opposite Bringing Down the House, starring movie. Steve Martin and Queen Latifah.
Interesting.
Do you think there was confusion at the time?
Maybe there was.
Well, yeah. Which piece of content am I consuming right now? I thought I was going to get the book version of this cute romantic comedy starring Steve Martin and Queen Latifah, and instead I'm getting the inside out of card counting.
Yeah, but it was a true story. And even then, there was like casinos would make calls. And so if they were trying to run their scam in one casino, it wasn't a scam. It was just like basically counting cards. But essentially, you have card counters for a table, like if there's some amount of decks. And depending on what cards have come out, the deck could be good for players or bad for players. So you would have people at different tables counting, just betting normal. When they get a good deck, so okay, now for the next like 15 minutes, this is going to be a positive deck for players. They make some kind of signal, and then the whale comes over and bets big on that table. So they're basically, you have like people that are out there filling out these different tables, just betting regular amounts, but they would make a signal to one of the people that have a lot of money. They might come in and act like, hey, let's put a bunch of money down. And not that you're going to win every time, but you're now betting on a table that's in your favor instead of betting on a table that's, you know, not. So anyway, it's kind of interesting, but they would figure it out and they would identify the people and they would make calls to the different casinos. And they couldn't do it anymore because they were, you know, they were called out. They were now, like, you can do this in minutes. Like, it's all electronic. You can figure this stuff out just the way a bet is placed. Just, you know, no one's betting on this game. Why is someone betting here? So I think there's a really good system in place to catch a lot of this. So that's good. I don't want to see, like, this over sort of regulation or whatever. But, Scott said 21 is in the movie. Kevin Spacey. Yep. Yeah, Spacey was, like, the professor that, yeah. Anyway, it was a good book. I like the book if you want to check it out.
Is it on your shelf?
I bet you it is.
I bet it is.
I'd have to look.
Yeah.
I'm not sure where. Because I have a bunch of gambling books.
Yeah. Yeah, you've got Doyle Brunson's Super System over there.
Is he still alive?
I don't know. Texas Dolly?
Texas Dolly.
Yeah.
Let's see if he's alive. All right. Well, why don't we, I think that's all we got. Why don't we take a quick break and we'll come back and answer some questions.
He is still trucking. He's 89 years old.
Nice. I don't know if he plays. I used to watch poker like a lot.
I watched it a lot when it was doing that thing like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I used to go play. It was a lot of fun. Playing poker in Vegas is kind of, it's antisocial basically, because you're not like, if you can, you and Dave and I can go to a blackjack table or craps and play together. But if we're playing poker, we're like playing against each other.
I mean, you can get drunk playing blackjack. If you get drunk playing poker, you're going to lose your
ass. Yeah, that's probably bad. But it's not as social where, like, if we had eight of us, we could all get around a craps table and have fun. And if, you know, we hit the point, we all win, it's great.
Yeah, yeah.
It's hard to do
unless
that.
Unless one of your asshole friends is playing Don't Pass.
Don't do that. Yeah, you don't want to be friends with those people. That's no fun. You're in Vegas to, like, if you're trying to eke out, like, a 2%, you know, no. We want to all win and all buy a shot and do something dumb together. As opposed, like, that's what you play for. Like, we're all on a heater and everyone's winning money and stuff. Like, that's what you play for.
So here's the thing. You want to go to break, but I'm gonna get this in here. Because one of the good things about, so a lot of people get scared off when somebody comes to the table playing Don't Pass. They're like, nah, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm walking away. Fuck this guy.
Yeah.
Breaking that guy when he comes out. Because first of all, the only people who play Don't Pass have a huge bankroll. Like, they've got a bunch of money. And suddenly you're in this oppositional situation where you're like, no, I'm going to break you. when you do that, and that person who's, like, always sober, like, always just, like, the least fun person you've ever met in your life, when you break them and they get just steaming mad, it's so good. It's one of the most beautiful things in the world.
And it's weird. Like, for when you're playing the pass line, hopefully people understand craps. If they don't, it's like, there's just this finality to it when you crap out, right? Yeah. Like, it's like, all this money's on the table, seven out, son of a bitch. It's just like, all this money comes down. It's more of like a you know, death by a thousand cuts when you're playing the don't, because like someone hits, oh, 0.6, someone hits a six, okay, he loses his bet, and then he puts it up again. But they might do the don't come, and so, oh, he's got a don't come on the four, and then, oh, someone hits a random four, and it's like, oh, that comes down, you know? Yeah. So they sort of just like keep losing little bets along the way, where for us, when you're playing the pass line, it's like, but money, all gone, and it's crap. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I want to go back to Vegas.
Yeah, that just made me want to go play some craps.
Let's go play some craps.
But imagine if I could do that easily on my phone. Wouldn't be good.
Can we? Can we do it?
Probably.
We can't. California, it's not legal.
So it's not legal, but you can still do it.
I used to do, like, remember poker was on online, and then they shut it all down.
Yeah, that's how I spent a good portion of my second year in college, in addition to pool.
Playing poker?
Yeah, it was poker and pool and not a whole lot of class.
Can you do, so it was like Poker Stars or like Party Poker. There was different.
Party,
like,
Poker was the one I was doing.
I think I did that too.
Yeah.
You know what was cool? Like, I played some tournaments in a live card room because we have them in California. It's so slow, like, to actually have someone deal out all the cards. So when it's like,
I used to play like two or three tables at once on Party Poker.
Right. But if you're like live, so say the whole point is you're trying to, if you're better at it, you want to get as many hands in as possible. So in a live poker room, if it's a half hour before the blinds go up, like, you might only get like six, seven hands and the blinds are going up and you're like, holy cow. So it goes up fast. So you kind of have to like push your money in. You have to take chances where you can wait around more on the online stuff because you're getting a crap load of hands because they can just instantly deal. Boom, 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 boom. And then they would have like, there were apps where you could, or not, they weren't apps at the time, but they would be like, it would like data mine, like the players you're playing against. And so you could say like, oh, that guy is a rock. Like he never, if he's opening, don't get in, you know, or this guy opens every pot, you know? And so you could kind of feel out for that. So you know, if they're super loose or super tight or whatever.
Yeah, no, it's all about tight aggressive, baby. Tag.
Tight aggressive. Yeah. We should get a play.
We should get a game going. We should get a POC game going.
That would be fun. So the point is like Party Poker, are any of those still around where you can do it in legal gambling states that it's legal now? Because we couldn't do it here. I don't know if any of those are back that you could do it. Like, you can do, like, FanDuel and stuff. I assume you could probably do those. Yeah. I don't know. Anyone in the chat know? Gambling legal states, can you do online poker still? All right, let's take a break, and we'll do a few questions. All right, we're back here on the Podcast of Champions. Thanks. We got like 40 people live in the YouTube room.
Yeah.
So yeah, thank you for that. Thanks for all the comments that are in there. If you have any questions you want to put in there, we will get to them. We have some emails this week. Start off with a trivia question from Matthew. I've done zero research, but I'm willing to assume the Marshall team, where the entire team died in a plane crash, returned more players than this year's Colorado team. Just food for thought. Keep it mediocre, guys. Matthew.
Wow.
Was it like literally the entire team? I didn't see We Are Marshall, but
I don't know.
Do you remember? I don't know what that. I saw another Colorado player enter the portal, and I was like, another guy? But it was someone that I think was off the team already. So I don't know, but it was like someone that had.
Yeah, only 37. Well, God, only 37 members of the football team died.
So they definitely returned more people than.
They probably returned more people.
Yeah.
That's a dark, dark, dark.
That's a dark way to go. Yeah.
Statement. Okay. This is from Montlake Blake. Pac-12 ROM communism. With all the news coming out of Colorado, it's easy to forget how the saga began. Deion took Jackson State to new heights and had his choice of suitors. You might say he had even achieved Freddie Prinze Jr. circa 1999 levels of desirability. He was rumored to be down to Cincinnati, about 12 months removed from a CFP appearance. USF, located in a talent-rich state, which could provide a prime ladder climbing opportunity to eventually land at his alma mater, Florida State. Auburn, who was rumored to be in the mix before they opted for the safe pick and hired Christian of the Year candidate Hugh Freeze. And then there was the woeful 1-11 Colorado Buffaloes, the college football equivalent of the awkward, knock-kneed girl stumbling and spilling her books all over the football field down the stairs out front of school. Watching this makeover he's attempting with the Buffs has me wondering, did Deion simply lose a bet? Is he trying to she's all that Colorado? Thoughts? Follow up, what rom-com best describes the other 11 schools? Okay. Let's start there. Let's start with Deion.
Yeah. So he sent a clip of, I don't remember the movie, but then I watched the, it was like a 3-minute sort of summary of the movie, but like the kind of awkward girl and Freddie Prinze Jr.
She's all that. Rachel Lee Cook, baby.
She was kind of hot in there, huh?
But that was the whole thing where she starts as like the nerd who's just like literally the only thing that's not like supremely movie star attractive about her is that she's wearing glasses.
Right.
And then she takes off her glasses and suddenly everyone's like, oh my God.
She's hot, put up her hair or whatever. Yeah.
So anyway, but his point about Deion, the thing that Colorado had that none of his other suitors had, because Auburn wasn't truly a suitor because they opted for Hugh Freeze, is it's a Power Five. And so in theory, it has access to the playoff in a way that Cincinnati and USF, I mean, I don't know. Are they going to in the Big 12-ish era? Maybe. But they are currently Power 5, Colorado. He's probably thinking, I'm a short-timer. He's also probably thinking, you know, I can do what I just did there. I can reload completely, whereas Cincinnati and USF were not disasters, you know? Can you really jettison literally everyone the way you could at Colorado? Will there be as much appetite for that? On top of that, I mean, think about when Deion was coming up. Colorado was a power.
Yeah.
Then he's probably thinking, well, the potential of that program is higher than Cincinnati and USF. So I think there's a lot of contextual things that make it make sense.
And it's going to be a lot harder than like taking off Colorado's glasses to make them good, right?
Yeah. No, this is not a Rachel Lee Cook situation. This will be like plastic surgery. But
what if Colorado does like win the Pac-12? Does Colorado go off and like try to hire somebody else? Because like she went to the prom with somebody else or something, right?
Like, I don't remember the movie, man.
It looked like that was the thing, like that he brought her up and then she went with like the dickhead to the prom or something. But then he came back and I don't know, whatever. But
yeah.
That wouldn't happen in college football.
And then he said, follow up, what rom-com best describes the other 11 schools' most recent coach hires? Very much kidding.
Thank you.
Keep doing whatever the hell it is you're doing.
Don't know.
P.S. If you're in the market for a new drop for Colorado or maybe for Coach Prime, looking down another former blue chip transfer,
might have suggested this gem.
Yeah, they did pick up Savelle Smalls, right? Did we bring that up last week?
No, we didn't.
The former five-star that transferred out of Washington. So that was a good pickup there. I don't know what the drop when I clicked the link was the She's All That video.
Yeah, so maybe it's just you're supposed to.
I mean, it's like 3 minutes long. That's not a drop. So I don't know if there was a specific. It was basically like that Kiss Me song. Kiss me. You know.
Oh, maybe we should just do that.
So maybe just a piece of that
Kiss
song.
Me, I'm by the beer and Marley.
Exactly, yeah.
Swing, swing.
It's basically that. It's like a video to that whole song. It's like shows clips of the movie. But he also has a Ted Lasso thing. I believe in communism, rom-communism, that is. That's the. But I don't know. There's no audio associated with that.
So. What the hell is the bearded barley, by the way?
Bearded barley?
The line is, kiss me out of the bearded barley. Nightly, beside the green, green grass.
So I'm assuming this is a farm or something, right?
But like, what is bearded barley?
Maybe it's barley that is about to be...
Not shucked, not it trimmed. Has,
it
not,
could be, you know, it's about to be harvested because now it's got a beard on it. I have no idea. That would just be a guess. Do you have to Google bearded barley now?
I think I do. God damn.
Yeah. Do you want me to start the next one?
Or no, just hang on.
Okay.
Okay. Bearded barley. Oh, there's, oh, we got important. Okay. Bearded barley may be just a mistake in the transcription of the lyrics in the song Kiss Me by Sixpence None the Richer from pearled to bearded barley. Yet if it is indeed bearded barley, it refers to a wheat like plant which has overgrown and is ready for harvest, allowing a couple to take some comfort behind.
Boom.
But it could be pearled barley. So what would that be?
I don't know. Bearded barley.
What is pearled barley? Pearled barley is barley.
Are you not impressed that I said it was like harvested barley?
I mean, we can all figure that out.
Did you?
Yeah, sure. Pearled barley is barley that has been processed to remove its fibrous outer hull and polished to remove some or all of the bran layer. So, interesting. This is interesting because if it's bearded barley, it means one thing. And if it's pearled barley, it means the exact opposite. Like, it means barley that has been...
Already
like nurtured and cured and harvested and smoothed. It's been smoothed.
Right. So you don't want to be kissing by the pearled barley because that's like in a process area.
But that maybe that means you're
inside. The bearded barley is like outside,
yeah, but
flowing
you're
outside. In the wind.
There could be mosquitoes. There could be lots of things. But if you're kissing by the pearled barley, you're inside. You're near the pantry. You can get a snack afterwards.
It's more romantic to be out by the barley. Like the, you know. Green, green grass. There's no green, green grass in the pantry.
Yeah, I mean, so I guess speaking to this, she also says the next verse, I think this kind of figures it out. It is bearded barley because she says, oh, kiss me beneath the milky twilight. Now, I would never describe twilight as milky.
Right.
That seems odd.
What's the name of the group again? It's like weird.
Sixpence None the Richer.
Sixpence. Okay. Yeah.
Strike up the band and make the fireflies dance. Silver moon sparkling. So kiss me.
Were they a one hit wonder?
Yeah, dude.
They had to be, right? Like,
what the fuck is this?
Had to be one hit wonder. It's amazing when it's like, this is like a song that you know, and it's like, yeah, they did nothing else. Like, okay. This is from Deion Sanders, Disney Princesses. Ryan and Dave. You ignorant sluts. Last week, you two tried to go, we don't have anything to talk about Disney Princess compared to Pac-12 coach, and I was mildly disappointed by you guys' half-assed pick. See, Deion Sanders has a perfect Disney comparison, and you guys blew it. The reason being that you guys put too much emphasis on the princess part. That was a pause for dramatic effect.
No, he wants you to pause for dramatic effect.
I did pause, and then I explained that I paused. Deion Sanders is Kuzco from The Emperor's New Groove. Again, I'm supposed to pause. I don't know who this is.
Or neither do I. I've never seen this. What is this?
I don't know. Is this a Disney?
It's not a princess movie. Okay, I'm not an aficionado of everything that Disney has ever produced.
Oh, he says, tell me this doesn't describe Deion. His introduction is him kicking the door down by yelling, boom, baby. Then he has someone in Elvis attire sing about how great he is. Then he goes on a journey that humbles him a little bit. Kuzco has an assassination attempt and Deion almost dies in a car crash. Oh, he almost died in a car crash, yes. Finally, the journey takes him to the big city to living in the from the big city to living in the mountains. Still not convinced. If you remember during the theme song, it stops when Cusco backs up into an old man. Angered, that man threw off his glove. His groove. Angered that that man threw off his groove, Cusco has security literally throw the old man out the window. Now, according to my sources, I guess it would be like the players, right? They're just as valid, as real as the sources reporting on the Pac-12 media deal. This exact scenario has happened with at least three different Colorado players who threw off Dion's groove. Thanks.
I don't know the movie. It sounds great.
Is it a Disney movie?
Apparently. I don't know. It's not like, it's like a, so it's from 2000.
Okay.
It's an animated slapstick comedy filmed. But it's not like a, it's not,
it's, but
not
it's
a,
Disney?
Yeah, it's Disney.
Okay. I was just thinking if it's animated and like that just gets lumped into Disney, but
no.
Yeah. No. Never heard of it. Sorry.
I mean, I've heard of it. I just, I didn't ever.
Sorry, Richard.
Sorry, Richard. My apologies. All right. Next up, we got John and Brea. Ooh. Transfer portal time machine. Hello, Ryan and Dave. The transfer portal time machine is now open, allowing schools in the Pac-12 to go back in time and bring in one former player or coach as a transfer for the 2023 season. Which player or head coach would you transfer in from each school's past, which would greatly improve their respective team this year? Would Andrew Luck make Stanford a bowl team? Could Ronnie Lott get USC to the college football playoff? Is there any former Sun Devil that can help ASU compete for the Pac-12 title? Could Terry Donahue take UCLA to the Rose Bowl? You only get one time machine transfer per school. And the portal closes soon.
Wow. It's going to be hard, though.
It's very hard.
I mean, I like who he said. Like, I'd probably go Andrew Luck or Christian McCaffrey for Stanford. Who would you rather do?
I think I'd probably go Christian McCaffrey because I think he's the one who's least dependent on other factors, like receiver talent, offensive line talent.
Yeah.
I think he could, you know, make some things happen. Simply as a kick returner, he could probably score some touchdowns.
He said Ronnie Lott. I'd probably go with like a linebacker, like a Junior Seau or something, because I think they need more help there than the secondary.
Yeah, I think that would make sense.
For SC.
Yeah, it's one of your defensive players from the years past.
UCLA, who would you do? Would you do coach? Would you do?
No, UCLA, I think it's somebody.
Kate McNow?
No, somebody in the defensive side. I mean, I think, again, you could go with one of the linebackers from years past, throwing Anthony Barr on this team, you know, getting 14 sacks off the edge, that'd be a difference maker. Eric Kendricks at middle linebacker would be a difference maker. And that one, like, of those all-star types in the front seven would change the complexion of the entire defense to probably a top 50, top 60 unit.
Okay.
So I think that would probably be the pick. You know, one of those guys. I mean, you could even go like Brian Price, defensive tackle, or Kenny Clark, defensive tackle.
Kenny Clark would be good. Yeah.
Just somebody like that.
Let's do the Arizona schools.
All right.
ASU, like Jake the Snake, maybe. I mean, they got
to. I mean, the thing with ASU is it's so unknown what they're even going to look like that it's hard to pick. You would just have to pick like who's their most talented player in history.
Yeah.
And who is that?
I don't know. I'd be Jake. I'd go Jake the Snake.
You'd go Jake the Snake Plumber. Go Terrell Suggs.
Suggs could be. Yeah, I mean, he's better.
Yeah. All right. And then Arizona.
Like a Teddy Bruschi or something.
Yeah, that'd probably be good. I mean, you could even Gronkowski. Gronk would be fun. One of those Arizona.
I think Bruschi would like you know, be involved more.
Yeah, probably.
I love that. Like Dennis Erickson could be like three. Like you could pick him three times if you wanted. Like three different schools he's been at.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
If you want a coach.
Yeah, if you wanted to pick.
I'm curious, like where we do a coach. You know, okay, Utah. I mean, they like Alex Smith was amazing. He was like undefeated. Who are some of the studs?
I mean, you could add like an Eric Weddle because you got versatility there. Other Steve Smith.
Right.
I don't know. I think there's options, but again, Utah doesn't need a whole lot. I think you'd probably go Alex Smith just because of Cam Rising's uncertainty for this season.
Colorado, like Eric Bieniemy or something, or what would you?
Colorado, I think. When in doubt, go Cordell Stewart.
You could do Cordell Stewart.
Yeah.
Or what, you know, Rashawn Salaam, like, you know, won the Heisman.
Yeah.
I think I would go Cordell Stewart though.
Yeah,
because he could just do so much.
I would almost invariably go Cordell Stewart.
Yeah. We did Stanford. What about Cal? Aaron Rodgers. You know, it's like Marshawn Lynch. Someone like that.
I would probably go Marshawn Lynch.
Really? Over Aaron Rodgers?
Well, again, because it's not dependent as much. Marshawn's going to create, like, even in a shitty offense, he's going to create at the college level, like, 5.5 yards per carry per game, no matter what. And he'll do it on high volume. Aaron Rodgers obviously was insane at Cal. And so if you can get him back, that'd be great. But I think I'd go Marshawn.
Okay. Let's see.
Oregon State?
Oregon State. It's funny you could do Jonathan Smith.
Well, that's the thing. It's like Oregon State, a lot of, like, they've had a lot of good running backs, but do they really need a running back?
Right. They have good
running backs. Like, do they need Steven Jackson to come back?
But if you did, like, Ocho Cinco or TJ Huitzmanzada or someone like that.
Brandon Cooks, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you could throw Huitzmanzada in there, that'd be pretty awesome. I don't know. That's a tricky one because I think a lot of what they're good at is what they've been good at historically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Give me like Huitzmanzada.
Okay. Oregon. You want to go like Heisman? You want to do like.
Yeah, that's a tricky one because I don't know that they need, like, Marcus Mariota would be obvious. Like, yeah, of course. But do they need that?
But one of the like defensive linemen. Good.
I mean. There you go. Haloti Ngata
would be freaking awesome.
Yeah. No, give me that.
Okay.
All right. Screw that.
You want to bring back Chip Kelly, though?
No. I mean, if you could bring back Chip Kelly from 2009, maybe.
I think that's what you would, right?
Yeah. Like, all right. Washington.
Steve Entman, maybe.
Warren Moon.
Moon would be pretty awesome. But they got Penix. So, like,
I don't know if you need a quarterback.
I would go Entman, I think. Like,
yeah, I could do that. The thing is, like, when Washington was really good is not necessarily my wheelhouse. Like, a lot of those early 90s, late 80s guys.
He was, like, probably the most prominent one. Like, he wasn't, like, finished high up in the Heisman, right? I thought so.
Oh, yeah, I think so.
As a defensive player.
Okay, whatever you
say. But that's what popped the top of my head. I'm sure I'm missing a bunch of guys. But, like, we obviously did no preparation for this, so this is just basically what.
Washington State's easy, I think. Drew Bledsoe,
yeah. I mean, he would be a big upgrade over Cam Ward.
I think that one, I think, is obvious.
Yeah. They've had some really good, like, corners and stuff. Like, but, yeah, I think you go Bledsoe.
Yeah.
Nice. All right. I think we did all right with that. All right. So here's the thing.
Oh, somebody said, and this is probably correct, instead of Huitzmanzada, Chad Johnson.
I said Ocho Cinco, yeah.
Yeah.
I said Ocho Cinco too. Okay. I mean, either one of them. But so James wrote us a pretty long email. He's a Jake from UW that was.
No. He asked us not to read this.
I know. I'm saying, like, it's pretty long. And then he says, after writing this email and reflecting on it further, I decided I should ask you not to read it on the show. Thank you for Jake. I don't know.
He doesn't want us to read it, so that's fine.
Okay. We won't read it.
This is from Frank in Sacramento.
Okay.
It's been done before. On November 30th, 2014, UAB decided to close down the football program. UAB football was reopened on August 18th, 2017, with more retiring scholarship players, 13, than Colorado has now, 12.
Wow.
Returning, I assume he means.
Oh, yeah. He put retiring. Returning. That's pretty funny.
That's pretty funny.
That they closed the program down for 3 years, and they still had more guys.
Insane.
There's that. And then Baxter, Colorado burns through. Dear Dave and Ryan, regarding your discussion of how Deion Sanders treated the Colorado players, I disagree with Dave.
No.
Most people do.
Nope. Try that again.
He disagrees with Dave.
Try it again.
He says agrees with Dave. Fine. I was trying to, like, slip up by. He shows no class in his, quote, "you're not my guy" way to clean out his roster. When Mick Cronin got the head coaching job at UCLA, his first message to players were, whoever shows up to practice tomorrow is, quote, my guy. He did that to show that he had no preconceived notions about players, playing time, bringing in his guys, etc., and showed he had class. Now, granted, this was before the transfer portal, and basketball with 15 or so players is a little easier to manage than a football team with 75 players, but there's class and there's no class. Personally, I think Deion is bringing a ton of new energy to the team, and Colorado has to be excited about something different than Carl Durrell sleepwalking on the sidelines. My personal prediction is unless he surrounds himself with a lot of good X's and O's coaches and coaches who can clean up his messes that he will make everywhere he goes, his tenure at Colorado will flame out even more dramatically than his, quote, new sheriff in town intro. But I guess when you're 111, anything, even a dude with a few years coaching experience in a cowboy hat, will be an improvement. Baxter.
So I don't want to align myself entirely with this.
I think I do now after reading the whole thing. He agrees with Dave. Dave,
because
this.
I wouldn't describe any of this as like related to class. Cutting more or less the entire friggin' roster for Colorado is not necessarily the issue here. That's whatever. Like, you cut a bunch of guys. Well, they're a shitty team, so you're probably going to have to do that anyway.
They were very terrible.
Like, Mick Cronin inherited a basketball roster that had like a bunch of 4-stars on it. Yeah, you don't want to cut those guys, but. Deion Sanders inherited a roster that was like half recruited by Carl Durrell. So they were all, you know, guys who were really easy to get that he didn't have to compete for and who just put out a 1-11 season. Cutting all those guys is not necessarily the issue. Now, the way it was done is just kind of shitty.
Right.
Like, you don't need to be that shitty.
You could cut those many guys without like acting like.
But like, class is like a weird way of describing it. It's just being a dick. He was a dick in a way that you don't need to be when you're doing something that's like, you know, a little bit dicky, but has to be done. You don't need to be even more of a dick about it. Like, you don't need to like not know the guys' names that you're cutting. It doesn't take that much work to memorize 80 guys' names in the 3 months you've been in the program.
Yeah.
It's just being an asshole. So don't do that. If you're going to have to fire somebody, you don't want it to be like, I don't really know your name, but you suck, so get the hell out of here. Like, you don't need the bad feelings on top of everything else. Guys get it. I mean, yeah, they're kids, but they get the nature of the sport right now. They get that they were 1-11 last year. They get that they're not very good. They get all that stuff. But you could be less of a dick about it. Like, you can be like, hey, so here's the deal. I'm bringing in a lot of guys. Jake, or whatever your name is. Jake, I'm bringing in a lot of guys. Your scholarship's here, but you're not going to play. You're not even going to be on the scout team because I need better guys on the scout team. Now, I that's not to diminish you. You can find a level to play at, and we're going to help you. You know, we've got a bunch of support staff here who are going to make calls for you, but you can't stay here. And I'm a new coach, so I can't.
You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here.
You can stay at Colorado. You're just not going to be on the football team because I can cut you too.
Yeah.
But I want you to find a good spot, and I don't want this to be hard feelings. It's just the reality of the situation. And it's a blunt conversation, but recognize you know the guy's name and explain to him the situation, and then tell him you'll help him out. There's no hard feelings as much then. Or there might be, but at least you haven't, again, been a huge asshole about it. So I guess that's more my thing with how Deion reportedly treated these guys, you know. Know their names. The other part, I mean, I don't think you can take anything from this except I think he has set himself a little bit further back on the rebuild time because I think you there was more wheat than chaff than 12 scholarship returners would indicate. You probably could have retained a little bit more and had a better leg up heading into this year. I don't think there was any need to cut whatever it ended up being 50 scholarship guys, something like that.
I think you got to a point, though, where if you're going to cut that many, you're also going to lose some guys that you didn't want to lose because it's just like, I mean,
it's a bunch
too much. It's like there's too much there and like, hey, I'm out of here.
If you're one of 12 returning, you got to be like, I'm either the best guy on this team and it's obvious and clear, or I'm the worst guy and it doesn't matter where I go, I'm going to be the worst guy. Because if you have even a pulse, it's like this dude is bringing in 60 new players this year. where am I going to fit into that if I'm a returner? Like, he's going to prioritize his guys. So what? Why would I even stay here?
Yeah.
So like for Montoni and Lamonius Craig, for him, I mean, they're bringing in a shitload of receivers.
Right.
So if you're Lamonius Craig, you're like, well, I'm pretty good.
And I can go somewhere else.
I can go somewhere else. And also, I might have a better leg up with a different coach who is wanting me versus Deion Sanders, who's inheriting me.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think he's I don't think I'm still pretty bullish on Deion actually working out at Colorado. I just think it might take a little bit longer because of what he's done with the roster.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I'm not as down on this. I get, you know, I get it. Like, you're 1-11 and you were lucky to win that one game, one of the worst college football teams ever. Band-Aids aren't going to help. You need drastic changes. Yeah. So I'm not going to be critical of like, hey, you need drastic changes. He's making drastic changes. Is it too much? I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
We got a late voicemail that came in.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Perk. I saw this question on the college football Reddit, the college football subreddit, and I was curious to see if it applied to your program. You know, one of the questions that was, or prompts that was put on there was, you know, what was the loss that really broke your program or changed the trajectory? And so I was wondering if for your guys' teams with USC and UCLA, if there's a loss that you guys kind of look back on, or, you know, what the biggest loss was that you guys really wonder how would things have been different had the result gone the other way. Just kind of curious if anything sticks out to you guys. Thanks.
For USC, UCLA, I mean, for USC, you could probably go like the Texas Rose Bowl, right? Where, you know, you had a 34-game win streak or whatever, and you would have won another title. Probably that one. I mean, but there were some games after that, too, where they lost, like, you know, the 13-9 game to UCLA. Like, do you go on and win a championship that year? But I'd probably just go the Rose Bowl. That's probably the easiest one for me. What would you say?
Sorry, there was breaking news. Nutshell, what's the question?
Oh.
I just had some.
Oh, there's some UCLA news or something?
Yeah, no, just a basketball thing. What?
Oh, yeah, so it doesn't. Bronny James, was it that or no?
No.
Okay. that's going to be crazy, by the way.
Yeah.
And they got Rodman's kid, too,
uh-huh.
to transfer.
Yeah, there's only one basketball.
This is Isaiah Collier, dude. I guess he's good. I don't know, apparently. Anyway, yeah, if change your, like, there was a Reddit question. Mm-hmm. You could change one loss, like for UCLA, like
Miami 98.
Miami 98. Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
They would have competed for a national championship that year.
All right. Let's do a few chat questions and we'll get out of here. Scott says, I'm disappointed there isn't a nickname for POC fans. I put this up in the beginning. Do we need a nickname for the POC fans?
Posers? Posers? No?
Posers?
Pockers?
I said pockmarks. I don't know. Yeah, think about it in the chat, people. Let us know what you think. Come up with something good. I don't know. I'm down with anything. Do you like it when people call the, like, their... Like, I think it was, what's his name? Jim Rome started calling his listeners the clones. And I think that sort of started that trend or whatever. Eddie, is Chip Kelly Maui stuck on an island? Chip changed the world and used to have magic, but is now a shell of himself. Is Dante Moore, I think, his magical fish hook, he means? A little confusing. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm kind of... So...
It's not worded very well, I think.
I mean, I'm trying to get on board. So the magical fish hook for Maui is the source of his magical powers. It's like his ability to do certain things.
Okay, this is like a Disney thing.
But
okay.
He had the hook... And then he lost the hook, and then he got it back. So it would have to be like, I think the hook would be going back to like a blur offense. But come on, he's not doing that, and also the offense is fine. So I don't know. I don't think it's a perfect analogy.
Okay. And then we got one last one from Random. That's the YouTube name. Can the Washington schools beat the Big Ten teams again this season? So Washington has Michigan State, and Washington State has Wisconsin, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Washington's going to East Lansing, I think, because they played. Is that right? Washington's going to be at East Lansing, and then yes. Wisconsin's coming to Pullman because Washington State went to Madison last year and got that big win. That was a huge win early in the season.
Right.
So Wisconsin upgraded their coach, getting Luke Fickle.
Mm-hmm.
Michigan State's sort of reeling. I think Washington will probably wipe the floor with Michigan State. I'm not sure about Wisconsin, but it's not easy to come all the way to Pullman and play.
Yeah, I mean, I think they have a chance of beating both of them. I mean, Wisconsin at Pullman is going to be interesting.
Unless they're doing that in Seattle. I don't know. I don't think they are. Right?
I don't think they are. I think it's supposed to be the first Power 5 non-conference in Pullman in, like, 150 years. I think Michigan State should be not very good again. So I think Washington will have a really good chance in that one. And then, you know, Washington State will be fine. And who knows if Wisconsin will be ready to go in Luke Fickle's first year.
Yeah. We had a couple ideas. Carlos says, how about the Dominions?
The Dumb Minions?
Dumb Minions.
Okay.
Howell says the Fighting Larry Scotts. I mean, getting Larry Scott in there would be something, you know, if we could.
Oh, what's Larry Scott's middle name?
Some good ideas.
I wish it doesn't have his middle name. Because I was thinking if it was like something like Larry David Scott, then we could be the LDS or something.
Ah.
Would that be?
But then it was pretty obscure. Reference.
No, but it'd be kind of Mormons. You know, it'd be kind of fun.
So really, you were hoping that he had David as
his
middle name.
Yeah, just, you know, thinking out loud.
That is my middle name.
It's my first name.
I've known that. Yeah.
Yeah.
For a while now.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess we should wrap things up. Somehow we went out an hour and a half talking about nothing. All right. Well, UCLA spring football.
What about with our names? Rivids? Dians?
Oh, something like that?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Champions?
Champs. Yeah. I like it. I don't know. We come up with something. Nothing's like popping into my brain. Like sometimes you get good at this and then like right now I'm just like.
The Mighty Herocious? Like a singular? Like the Cardinal?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The Herocious?
Yeah, I was going to say the Herocians or yeah. Herocians or
the Herocians?
All right. I think we got to go.
You think we got to go?
I feel like I didn't get laughing gas at the dentist's office, but I feel like I've got some somehow. Maybe it was like residual. Maybe it was just on in the room I was in while I was getting my teeth cleaned.
Yep.
I'm not sure. But yeah, I think it's going to wrap things up. But right over there is David Woods. I am Ryan Abraham. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. And we will talk to you next time.
Bye.